This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
All of the boys and the girls here in Paris. See to the night with outside, but with madness. I can't keep up, I'm a wreck, but I want it. Tell me the truth, is it love or just Paris? All of the boys and the girls here in Paris. See to the night with outside, but with madness. I can't keep up, I'm a wreck, but I want it. Tell me the truth, is it love or just Paris?
Welsh-born, New York-based LGBT pop icon, Bright Light, Bright Light. Rod, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It was lovely to have you. How are you?
Pretty good, yeah. There's been like a little bit of sickness going around the touring camp, but on the whole, I would say fantastic.
Well, first of all, let's talk about you, your music. I understand last year was incredibly busy for you. You've even been quoted as saying it was all a blur. Tell us about your year.
Oh, God. it's kind of been like a very busy couple of years, actually. There's been a lot of touring involved. So 2014, 2015 was on tour with Elton John for a year. And
wow.
Then 2016, my latest album Choreography came out, and then 2016, 2017 was touring that, basically. So it's just we're constantly recording and then going on the road and touring and then going back into the studio whenever you finish touring and then back on the road. So you sort of lose track of where you are in life, really.
I mean, it sounds very glamorous, but I suppose it's not that glamorous when you are working that hard. What was it like working with Elton John?
Amazing. I mean, he's somebody that is both musically and personally inspiring because he does a lot of philanthropy and he does a lot of fundraising, awareness raising, and then also has written some of the best songs in modern history. So it's like somebody that can do both of those amazing things is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it really is. Describe your music to us.
Ridiculous. It's fun pop music. It's pop music that's really inspired by 80s and 90s pop culture, like films primarily. And one of the reasons I was excited to come on and talk about stuff on this show and the station today is because a lot of my music is influenced by strong women. The album choreography was written based on dance sequences, which primarily feature strong female leads. And growing up in the South Wales valleys, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of praise for Shirley Bassey growing up.
Yep.
And Bonnie Tyler. And I just remember when I was growing up, a lot of the figures in popular culture that really struck me were female. And so I identified to, like, the strength of women in music a lot when I was growing up.
I think that's amazing. It really is. And you've said yourself as well that you raise money as well. You're a fundraiser as well. You don't like to talk politics. I was reading this interview.
Well, no, here's the thing. I'm happy to talk politics, but I don't want to be political within my songs. I think it's very important to understand, you know, how adept you are at wording things and how to get the message across, because we all know screaming into the void is useless.
Yeah.
Like, we've all seen in recent political events that people trying to use their voice for political causes is really risky and gets a lot of backlash. So I keep my politics out of my song lyrics, but I'm very political on my Facebook, my Twitter, my Instagram. I talk a lot about causes that I care about, and I talk a lot about things that I feel are really important to me and important to the good of the people around me. But I don't put that into my musical content. So it's being careful to use what I know when I think it's effective, but not to try and use it in a way that I don't think will help anyone.
And I like you say, you know, the role you have at the moment being, you know, out there in the public eye, it's good to use it for its advantages, isn't it? Instead of going on about, you know, other things. It's, and you know, your music, like you say, ridiculous, but it is fun, it is uplifting. Is that something you've always wanted to do, and do this kind of music? Is this something you've always wanted?
Yeah, I think I've been like gradually working up to it. You know, wasn't hugely confident when I started making music, and I was partly victim of being in the music industry where you're constantly told that nothing is good enough and you should be doing this and following trends, and if you're not doing something that's cool or buzzy then you're failing. And I just, after a while, just thought, like, I don't care, and I wanted to just have as much fun as possible.
That's a brave move. Very brave, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, but people do things every day that are so reliant on being brave, like, you know, being a midwife or like raising a family, and you just think, God, I'm just making music, I might as well have fun with it. So I just, yeah, I wanted to have as much fun as possible while I'm still young enough to just about get away with it.
Yeah, I hear you. I totally agree. You said that the last tour you met a man with your face tattooed on his arm. Is that right?
Yeah. Why? Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Wow. Describe that for us. And is this something that normally happens? You come across this all the time?
No. I mean, I meet a lot of people who are, you know, very respectful of my music and very into it and have followed it for a really long time. But having my face tattooed is just bonkers. It is another level featuring Jay-Z. He has this like montage, and it was Madonna, Björk, and me, and which is mind blowing because they're two of my favorite artists.
Oh, it's incredible.
And, yeah, it was crazy. The guy was so lovely, and it's wild to have reached the level of being tattooed on somebody's skin. Please God, he doesn't hit my next record. It'll be awful.
That would be shocking. But yeah, you know, you've made it when that happens. You've made no secret that you're a fan of film, and you've already considering writing a score tell us about this. Is it your love of films or music that comes first? And tell us about why you want to write a score for a film.
I'd say I spend a lot more time these days watching films than listening to music.
Wow.
Mainly for inspiration, because when you're listening to other people's music, it's really difficult not to be too influenced by it. You know, you get music stuck in your head really, really quickly. So if I'm in the creative process, I don't really listen to current people's music. I'm really worried about being too heavily influenced by that. Because if I hear something I like, I want to make something that sounds like that, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time getting inspiration for lyrics and themes and characters from film. So I write a lot based on like movie sequences that I've seen, or like tones that I see in the imagery. And I also love music, film. So I just go visuals with music. That's like a really big interest of mine, and I do so much really in film, and I really want to be able to score films eventually. So that's my like long-term plan.
I think that's an amazing plan. I know you've been on tour with Erasure, and obviously been on tour the last few years. I'm staying awake for 24 long hours. Do you have any tips of how to stay awake and build that stamina?
Oh my lord, it's really not going to be pleasant. I've done that multiple times. I think, yeah, once I had to stay awake for 39 hours to do a couple of shows, and it was gross.
How did you do that?
I really don't know.
It was gross.
Really gross. Like, we played a show in Salt Lake City, drove through the night to Denver. I then had a day of press. We did the show, then I had to get a flight from Denver to San Francisco to do an afternoon show. It was gross.
Oh my. I mean,
yeah, you're going to feel super gross.
Sorry. Going to feel so gross. But at least it's not 39 hours. And how was your tour with Erasure? What was it like?
Brill. They're my favorite band. So, like, getting to share the stage with them is such an honor. It's amazing. The musical pairing, I think, of us is really good, because they influence me a lot. And so my song sensibility comes a lot from their school of writing. So the fans connect with it really well. It's really fun. You know, we're all just wearing ridiculous outfits on stage. They're the nicest people in the world. Their crowds are brilliant. The venues are gorgeous. It's just, I couldn't have asked for more, really.
I think it's brilliant. Very quickly, inspirational woman. Who would you say is your inspirational woman?
I'm going to say two people, if that's all right.
Go for it.
One that influenced me from youth up until today and beyond is Tori Amos. I remember watching her in interview, in concert, and in the press, talking about rape, talking about being a woman, talking about misogyny, talking about position in the music industry. You know, so many causes that she drew attention to and spoke very boldly about, I think, is super important in a place where it really wasn't okay for women to talk about stuff, so frankly. She's done so much fundraising work and so much awareness work. I think she's a really important figure. I don't think she's got anywhere near the credit she deserves for her production and writing skills throughout her career. And I think that she's been bold and brave and a real inspiration to so many people across the world. And I'm also going to say Ellie Goulding, because she took me on my first tour around the UK, and I saw that girl work so hard in a way that nobody expects a pop star to be working. Mm. She was super nice. She was like friendly. She was supportive. She was so courteous and gorgeous the whole time. And she had fun, and she treated her bandmates really well. And she has elevated herself to this extreme pop star level. And she's a lovely person. And every so often she sends me a message on Facebook. And she's just wonderful. And I love watching people who are genuinely great and work really hard have their comeuppance. It's amazing.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. I love both of your inspirational women, and I love you a little bit more. Thank you. Your album Choreography is out now. Is that correct?
It is. Yes.
Fantastic. Rod from Bright Light, Bright Light, thank you so, so much for talking to us here at FUBAR. Take care, Rod.
You too. Speak to you soon.
Coming up on the FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK
24-hour radio show.
Benjamin Zand.
We've got Benjamin Zand.
The inspirational women I've met in my life are definitely women I speak to whilst making documentaries. There was a lady I interviewed in Kazakhstan who was essentially, she was broadcasting a lot of the crimes, a lot of the deeds that the government were doing, and her life had literally been torn apart. A government agent had essentially started a fake relationship with her, had sex with her, recorded it, put it online, and literally destroyed her entire life. And she was still going on to fight against it, both for women, both people who had been kind of fucked over by society, essentially.
Incredible.
So they're the people who I respect.
Benjamin Zand,
FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, welcome back. This is FUBAR Radio. This is our 24-hour live marathon for UN Women UK, all for the He For She charity. The He For She invites men and boys to build on the work of the women's movement as equal partners, crafting and implementing a shared vision of gender equality. We would like you to donate. If you could text, I should know this by now, I've been doing it for long enough. Text UNWN, followed by the amount you want to donate, to 770. All money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. And I also want to say, in the studio, welcome to Isata. Thank you for joining us, Isata.
That's all right. You've got way too much energy for this time, though. Your energy
I'm
is high.
This. I'm
Your energy
this.
Is high.
Yeah,
like, I'm
we've
still
got
your
collar. An
Well, thank you for saying that.
No, it's good, man.
I believe we need another guest, maybe on the phone lines. So therefore, on the phone line right now, we've got Annabelle Knight, the UK's leading sex and dating expert. Annabelle, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? Are you tired?
I am doing all right. Is that
you
a good answer?
You sound like it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you.
Very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Well, that's good. I'm... how many hours in am I? I started
Eight.
At 5 o'clock. Thank you very much. 8 hours in, so it's good. I feel...
Well, I was about congratulations.
Thank you very much. I was about to say I'm halfway there, but I'm not. not at all. Well, you are the UK's leading sex and dating expert. You've got a debut novel called The Endless Summer, which was a bestseller. You're also a dating expert on MTV's Single AF. Actually, I can say as fuck. But, first of all, how did you become the UK's leading sex and dating expert?
Do you know, I was just talking today. I did a podcast for the Metro, and they said, what's the most common question you get? And I said, how did you do it? How are you doing this? I started off about 8-9 years ago, and I was just doing general presenting in and around London. And I answered a casting call for... like sex education videos, and it was just for a presenter, learn a few lines and do that. And the company I started working for was called Love Honey, and they were, they still are, a retailer of adult toys. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, I loved it. I took to it like a duck to water. We did more videos. And just from doing that, I started to get approached by magazines for comments, and I didn't really know what I was talking about. I just kind of was doing a bit of research as and when, and I thought, do you know what, I really need to kind of sort myself out and get on with this, and become qualified. So fast forward 7.5-8 years later, and I'm now a couples counsellor. I've got qualifications in psychology, body language expert. I write for all the national newspapers and magazines and TV and radio, and my own range of sex toys as well, which is fabulous.
You've got... So... I feel very British right now. So with your sex toys, like, is this like a natural progression, you know, seeing as you are taking over the sex and dating world? I feel quite embarrassed. Again, such a prude. How did the sex toys come about?
Well, I launched them in conjunction with Love Honey. I've had a long and very close relationship with them since those early days. And 3 years ago, I met with Neil and Rich, who own the company, along with Bonnie, Neil's other half, who does all the buying and kind of organising what we sell. And I just said, guys, I just wanted a sex toy. I wanted an Annabelle Knight sex toy. And it's just grown from there. We've seen a few come and go, and now I've got a capsule collection of four, which I am doubling this year. So 2018 will be at double to eight. And then who knows, maybe more in 2019.
That is amazing. That really, really is. Well, congratulations. And I know that before you came on the phone lines, my producer said, do you have any questions? Dating. We had a love expert actually on at the start of the show, and she was saying, you know, to find your person or to start successfully going out there and dating, it's all to do with you first of all and how you perceive yourself.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Which is true. But how does one get a second date, a third date? Is it as easy as that?
I'm still trying to get a first date out.
It's the legs. It's the legs. It's the legs.
Shame. How do you, how do you have successful dates? Annabelle. Ooh, have we lost Annabelle? Oh, I think we may have lost Annabelle. We'll try to get her back. Thank you very much, Annabelle. We will try because I want to know the answer.
Amanda might have some suggestions. Amanda,
My love life, my sex life is non-existent.
We're talking about dates, though.
No, we're just talking about the date.
That's where you're going wrong. You're looking for the first date.
No, do you know what it is? It's the sex toys still in my
head. I've never felt so British in all my life. So we're going to hopefully get Annabelle Knight back because it will be good to talk about dating and how, for instance, a man can find a date.
I was actually on C4 First Dates.
Were you?
Yes. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I was.
What season?
Season one, episode two.
Can we go back and watch it? No, you don't want us to watch it? So awkward. So you'd never seen them beforehand?
No, yeah, you can go back and watch it. If I think you've got to go... I don't know if it's like on Channel 4's website.
What? Because then maybe we can see, you know. Maybe we can give you advice.
Annabelle Knight, are you back on the phone lines?
I am back. Oh, yeah.
Saved by the bell.
Do you know what? That was a tumbleweed moment, like literally.
So happy. Annabelle, I asked you before then, and then we all started getting excited and we lost you. What are the secrets to successful dating?
Yes.
Well, I agree with the love expert that it is all about how you perceive yourself and knowing your value. But in knowing your value, you also, you know, people often say to me, how do I go from the first date to a relationship? And I would tell people that aren't going from a first date to a relationship that person that they are dating isn't relationship material for them. There's kind of a fine line between self-sabotage, where you don't actually want a second date, but society tells us that we should be in a relationship, so we mentally prepare ourselves for, right, okay, I'm dating this person, I've met them, therefore they're good enough. They're not. If you were going to date them for a second, third, fourth time and go into a relationship with them, you would be doing that. It's just about your stars aligning, and other than it coming down to dumb luck of just meeting someone you like and someone who likes you back, it really is as simple as that.
I think we were all expecting, well, if you walk like this, say this, boom, you're marrying. Yeah. But it really isn't that.
Yeah, absolutely. And being married isn't the be all and end all.
No,
being
not.
Happy is.
Yeah, that's so, so true. That really, really is. What are the most popular questions you are asked by people?
From men I usually get, how can I last longer in bed? And from women, it's, how can I orgasm during sex? And I think those are two key questions that really hold a mirror up to society, that we've just had a lot of surveys done. The Kinsey Institute, for example, say that almost 90% of men say that they're, and we're just talking about straight sex for this purpose, that their partner has had an orgasm, while only 40% of women say they have an orgasm every time they have sex. So there's a huge disparity between men thinking women have come and women actually having come. So men are wanting to last longer in bed versus women wanting an orgasm. So the two kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Very, very true. Very quickly, we just want to let you know that we've had to update the code for donations. The number is still 770, but we would like you to text UNWN15. And the amount you would like to donate to 770, that's text UNWN15, followed by the amount you would like to donate to 770. All money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. And if we've confused you too much, which, to be honest, there's a high chance I probably have, you can also find out more at londonartsweek.org. I would recommend you check the website out anyway, because it is fantastic. And Annabelle, when you meet new people, say if you're at dinner parties, events, and you tell them what you do, that you're a sex and dating expert, do people take it seriously? How do people react to your job title?
Do you know, almost 100% of new people I meet will go, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Change the subject in a moment of awkwardness, and then later on in the evening, come back to bend my ear about some sexual mishap or problem that they have. But I tend to judge my audience. If I'm with, I have a couple of very well-to-do friends, and I was at a well-to-do party with well-to-do kind of people. Mm. And I thought, oh, they'll be really judgmental. I'll just say writer, because that kind of summarizes everything. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Someone let slip later on in the night that I got my range of sex toys, and that was, for the duration of the night, the topic of conversation. Mm. So I did learn a lesson there with never judge a book by its cover.
Definitely.
I love that you have your own range of sex toys. That's amazing. Can you imagine? What are you going to use tonight, darling? Yeah. You're going to use me.
You know, one of my best friends from secondary school sent me a message the other day, and it was just like the full Annabelle Knight collection on her bed. And she was like, my husband bought all of these independently, thinking they'd be really good, but I can never use them because they have your face on the box.
Oh, wow. Oh. There's face and everything on the box. Oh. That would totally...
Yeah, I have my face on all of it.
You really want them to know that it's Annabelle.
Yeah, this is me. So when it does come to dating, again, there is no right or wrong way to date. Because I think as well, when people think about that first date, they get very nervous. They think, you know, do I talk too much? Do I do this? Do I do that? So are you saying that there is no right or wrong way? It's more down to maybe the compatibility of the person that you're with?
I would say the majority of it is down to compatibility. There are a few house rules that I like to talk about when it comes to dating. And the number one house rule is to leave your technology away from the date, because people use their phones as a crutch.
Yeah.
If there's a bit of dead air, or you know, you're not feeling 100% confident, you're never alone with a phone. It's like your little backup, which is great and fine if you're on the bus or waiting at a restaurant, but if your sole aim of a first date is to get to know someone, then put your phone away, because it does come across as really rude. And I can watch people on first dates and see from the other person's body language them literally drop out of the date there and then, the second that someone else gets their phone out, because it just shows a huge lack of interest in that other person, even if you are literally just having a quick scroll or just to see if someone's replied to you. Save it for the toilet. Just, if you need to check your phone, just wait until you need to wait.
Yeah, just wait. So what are the tips?
Just wait till you need to wait.
What other tips would you give for that elusive first date?
Don't make too much of an effort, because the same kind of idea is, you're trying to get to know someone, they're also trying to get to know you. So I think it's really accurate. It's like trade descriptions act. If you're going to a really nice restaurant, say, of course, you know, dress as you would go into a really nice restaurant, but you don't have to present what you think is the perfect image of yourself, because you already are perfect. So, you know, just boss that.
I've done that once, and he came really dressed up. It was really awkward.
Were you super impressed, or were you like, wow, dude?
Yeah, that's interesting. Were you impressed by that, or...?
No, I felt like I was really rude. I was like, no, because I thought like, oh no, he probably thinks that I really don't care. But I wasn't dressed badly. I was dressed quite nicely, but it was quite casual.
You just weren't in a ball gown.
I just went, and he wore a suit and everything. And so, do you know what I mean? I just felt like...
Where did you go?
Italian restaurant.
Okay.
So it wasn't, no, I wasn't like, do you know what I mean?
But
it's
just hoping
like,
he's there.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
But I was like, oh, and he was like, you look nice. I was like, oh, thanks, sorry.
Oh, as if you had to start your date with an apology.
I know.
Not good. That must be a no. Yeah. Starting your date with an apology must, like, that must be a like,
no. Do no, apologize, I'm me.
Yeah, no, so there was only one, so.
Do any of you ladies have any questions for Annabelle with dating?
I feel like I can speak to Annabelle for the whole night, for the whole morning.
Amanda,
to be
you're
fair.
A single lady.
I am a single lady. I've only ever had one boyfriend in my life. I'm 33.
Wow.
Oh, snap. Yeah. 33 is a good age.
A good age for what?
Jesus.
I don't know, like mortgages and realizing that life's not over.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I think I just don't know what it is. I know that. I feel like I've got to work on myself because I'm very much a person that I know that I couldn't approach a guy.
Okay.
Because I think it's the fear of rejection.
Yeah. Which is a really common fear, like men and women alike, you know, mm-hmm. we want to be accepted. It's ingrained into our brains mm-hmm. that being accepted is great, which it is. But I always think, the people that matter accept you for who you are and the people that don't accept you don't matter. So... You can't really, you know, you can't play by someone else's rules. You can only play by your own.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. And I think for me as well, I'm very much a people's person.
Mm.
And I think sometimes it's like, it's the personality comes out and I may miss the signs. I think this is what my problem is. Because my friends always say to me, Amanda, you always friend zone people. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like I almost don't see that a guy is actually really into me. I don't know if it's because I don't believe it or do you know what I mean?
It's more about you.
Yeah. So when you were Yeah. So you know, like what you were saying about the person that was here at the beginning of the show, they was talking about it. That kind of
resonates
kind of
with
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Because I feel like that's what but I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I just tell my family to continue praying. That's what I'm
talking about. Oh, man, we're all gonna pray.
Please, because it is what it is. But you know, I'm hopeful that you know my king is out there. You know, we're
Wakanda.
He is.
Annabelle,
what advice
would you give to then Amanda?
Who's struggling in every department?
Who's single? What advice?
Well,
would you
know,
give?
If I think you need a wingwoman, or if you're someone I can't read signs, I just don't know. You need someone that can read the signs and who's got your best interests at heart, just to help you on your way, because you know. Taking cues, like social cues, from someone who is good at reading body language. Like, not everyone is a natural body language expert or can look at another person and know what their intentions are by how they present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can, some people can't. Find someone who can, a friend, take them with you, or at least just let them look for your messages. Or I do it for my sister, I do it for my friends. I'll be like, what does he mean by this? What do they mean by this? And I'll read some messages and say, well, I think this, and this. And then I'm going to say 8 times out of 10 I'm right, because I have been spectacularly wrong on occasion.
Okay. Well, at least you could admit it.
Yeah, it's reassuring.
Yeah.
Annabelle, where can we find you online?
I was going to say, Nat, where can you find me now? Well, I'm kind of half in bed.
I
need a sex toy.
range of sex toys are available exclusively through lovehoney.co.uk. I am online on Facebook, just Annabelle Knight. Annabelle Knight on Insta, Annabelle Knight on Snap, and Miss Belle Knight on Twitter. And my website is AnnabelleKnight.com, and that's probably the record number of times I've said my own name in a sentence.
That is brilliant. Annabelle Knight, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us.
Thank you for having me. Well done, ladies. This is a fantastic show, and congratulations. Brilliant cause.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much.
Don't forget to donate, everyone.
Yes. Thank you, Annabelle. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
There
you go. It's Annabelle Knight. I love that she's got her own sex toys.
Yeah.
No, no, silence. Brilliant. It's lovely, Annabelle Knight. Thank you so much for talking to us. Now, I just want to say to Isa, welcome.
Hello.
Yes.
I
believe you know Fubar Radio quite well. You've been studio quite a few times.
Yeah, on the hip hop show mainly with Maesty and Sarah Love, man.
Tell us about yourself. Tell us about your work.
So I am a rapper, producer, educator, and I also have my own podcast, Heart to Art, where it focuses just on the culture and music and art. And I think, like, obviously, because of my personality, like, I've always been in male-dominated spaces, especially music, like a youth centre, you know, loads of boys around the mic, just me jumping in. And then, obviously, I play a lot of sport as well. Not so much now, but I used to play for Arsenal Ladies and Tottenham Ladies.
Did you?
I played for Arsenal before I played for Tottenham as well.
Did you?
So we probably know some of the same people.
We're an isotope.
Isotope.
You know what an isotope is?
No.
It's like the same thing but a different context. So my brothers are isotopes because they've got the same mum and dad, but they're boys in Arsenal, Tottenham. I've gone too far. It's too early in the morning.
No, do you know what it is?
I've gone too far. I can't take myself back.
Do you know what it is?
I thought you remixed her name.
No, that's what it was. And I was just like, we're an isotope. And I was like, that's not my name, but is it?
It could be.
Yeah, exactly. So, definitely, like, just music. Music's my thing, and when I think about sort of representation in the music industry, I'm sure you guys know it's kind of there's a lot of girls that are women that are doing their thing, but it's kind of like there is a sort of a block. There's a lack of representation, DJs, producers, MCs, and even as a teacher, I teach at a music college, and it's kind of really, really struggle to get girls into thinking about business, thinking about DJing, thinking about, not because they don't want to, but it's about confidence and sort of how many opportunities they think they're going to get on the outside. Mm-hmm. How many people do they see doing it? And so it's kind of really important for me to sort of go into schools and colleges and talk to girls, and not just about singing, but just about, not that, you know, singing like I'm a performer myself, but actually think about the business.
Why don't you think, and I think also
because I mainly work in areas that are quite underprivileged, there's even less representation from that demographic, and then take women even less. And I'm just like, why aren't you up? Why don't you think you could work for a radio station? Why don't you think that you can work for a publisher? Why do you only think you need to be Beyonce and that's it?
Because that's what they see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because that's as simple as that. But I think now it's changed in the sense that you are seeing more A&Rs and artist managers, even down to producers. You know, producers weren't even on a title of a song before, but you would have artists plus the producers, and now producers are actually, you know, kind of now artists themselves.
They're still, in terms of the amount, I mean, there are slightly more, but in terms of when you sort of measure it up against the guys, it's still a huge of a lack of representation. It's still a novelty as well to have a female, like, for me, a female MC. I mean, I don't have a big thing about people calling me a female MC. I don't really care about all that, but it's kind of like people are not really measured on their talent. It's just that they're a female.
That's interesting. Female MC. You're an MC. It's funny how we always stick that in front of it. We're going to listen to your song. You've got Crucial Conversations. Tell us what it's about before.
So Crucial Conversations is about, I remember I had to have like quite a serious conversation with somebody, and then somebody gave me a book called Crucial Conversations, and it's just basically about having quite hard conversations. And the thing is, I have a lot of hard conversations, but this particularly was quite hard. And so I addressed the song as if me talking to a female friend, because I've had quite a lot of crucial conversations with friends, have been through things, and so it's really amalgamated. It's not like about one person, but it's like a lot of my female friends into one person, and it's kind of, I created a story out of that.
Brilliant. Well, let's listen to it now. We're going to listen to Crucial Conversations.
Yeah.
One day I walk up to my friend and say, what's happening? She shrugs her shoulders and replies, where do I begin? You should have seen us back in school, we were just like twins for real. I haven't seen you in a while, these days you're always in. Don't even worry about the girls, yeah they've been gossiping. They're saying that she lost her looks and all because she's drinking gin. She thinks she's all that, man she's feeling like she can't win. It's pulling at my strings, heart is feeling like a violin. I know that what I gotta say is kinda hard to hear, and I was thinking long and hard while I was walking here. I know this conversation's gonna change the atmosphere, but you gotta know it's coming from a place of sincere. And I can see the storm approaching like it's Shakespeare, and you might shed a tear, but you'll see clear. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, sister don't fear. There's people pleasers out, they gotta beware. They'll multiply kisses in the end, your wounds are more severe. Please hear what I'm saying, them girls don't care. It's like you've hit self-destruct and you just can't trust, and now you crave attention and it's too much. I know you think relationships can make you feel better, but that boy, he makes you worse, that other criminal, whoever. He makes you hit the bottle, cut your heart until it severs. I say it cause I love you, I don't wanna give a lecture. Come on now. Those crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah, you know those crucial conversations, yeah. Crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah. Those crucial conversations. So now I'm starting with the heart and it's pumping fast. If I speak abrasively, I know that I will miss the mark. I speak persuasively, this conversation's getting dark. I'm trying to beg her not to walk on that abortion path, and now I'm feeling some resistance from my last remark. I wanna build her up to face a storm like she's Noah's Ark. Cause what you embark, it will last after dark and leave a deep mark. In your sleep, it will leap at you like a shark. Remember us in class, used to laugh, never thought for a minute life would turn out so harsh. Now I'm trying to understand the depth of all the patriarchs. She asked about me and I said, where should I start? She asked me if I'm sad that I'm not married yet. My mum keeps reminding me, how could I forget? She smiles a little, said, don't rush and lose your self-respect. I tell her, don't give up cause God's not finished yet. And that's for both of us. Every day I'm trying to focus on the positives. I know I want eternal life and never want a heart to split. And I'd be lying if I say that I don't think of it, that there's so many things that I can tell you that's a benefit. And now the conversation's getting less stiff. She knows about my problems, this girl knows that I'm not perfect. Look, and I'm not trying to force it, we've always been real. I'm glad this didn't end in conflict. Those crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah, you know those crucial conversations, yeah. Crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah. Those crucial conversations, those crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. Those crucial conversations, yeah, you know those crucial conversations. We've all had them, all had them, yeah, you know those crucial conversations.
To support the He For She campaign, aiming to change the reality for women and girls globally, text UNWN followed by the amount you want to donate to 70070.
Yeah, welcome back. This is Food Bar Radio. This is our 24-hour live marathon for UN Women UK, all in aid for the He For She campaign. Remember, if you'd like to text us to donate, all money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. Text UNWN15, followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. We're going to add someone else to this... debacle. To this debate. Let's welcome on the phone lines is Hannah Jewell. Hannah, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me. I feel like I've just caught you on the edge of madness.
Oh, Hannah, I haven't
Rachel, do you know what I have to say? Rachel, you're doing really well. Yeah. Really, really well.
Well done.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Hannah, you're actually calling from Washington. Is it 8 p.m.
I am.
Washington?
It's 8:30, it's a Friday night, and I'm tucked in bed talking to you guys, and it's honestly the best night I could imagine. So
that's adorable. Thank you very much. Now, Hannah, you're the writer of 100 Nasty Women of History, Brilliant, Badass, and Completely Fearless Women Everyone Should Know. You're also the former senior editor at BuzzFeed. And then you presented BuzzFeed's live 2016 election night show, which was watched by nearly 7 million people.
Oh, wow.
That is...
Yeah, it's sort of horrible to think about, isn't it?
That's incredible.
Wow.
Well, first of all, as a woman, being the former senior editor at BuzzFeed, that's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
Well, so it's funny though, the way that I've found that... So now I'm at the Washington Post, and I'm a pop culture host there on a new video team. And I found that different organizations have different titles that sound different levels of impressiveness from place to place. But yeah, at BuzzFeed, I was a senior writer, actually, and I kind of rose from being an intern there on an editorial fellowship program, which I believe they're actually hiring a new one in the UK office, if any young budding journalists are interested in getting a start. but yeah, and I sort of slowly worked my way up, and then from there I got this book deal to write about cool women in history, and now I've moved to the US, and yeah, here I am in Washington pretending to know what I'm doing.
I think we all pretend to know what we're doing, don't we?
That's a good definitely. Secret to know, honestly, in this life that everybody's thinking.
I think if you can convince yourself, you can convince anyone.
Yes, definitely.
It's so true. I've been blagging it. She's still blagging it. Yeah. What was it like to write your own book? What made you want to do that, first of all?
So I had written, when I was at BuzzFeed, I'd written a few posts there, lists about women in history. In fact, I've been told by your producers I'm allowed to swear on air, so I can tell you. The title of this first article I did was 12 Historical Women Who Gave No Fucks. And I just wrote that one Christmas, and it just did millions of views, and people sort of were so enjoyed not only learning about new women in history, but doing it in a kind of non-self-important way. Like, my style of writing is very conversational and internet-y and young, and I'm never trying to sound too much like a know-it-all, I guess. And so I went about writing this sitting in the British Library for hours and hours and, weeks and weeks, I should say. 4 hours research went into this book. No, and
half
just
an hour.
Sort of half hour Wikipedia is done. It was such a fun journey to get to learn about more and more women, more and more parts of the world, more and more periods of history. And then the way that I got to write the book was, hi, I've just learned this thing, come along with me and learn it at the same time. Now it's been out in the UK since November, and a lot of young women especially really love it. And then, but also there's some men who take issue with it because of my jokes about men in there.
So, of course they do, of course.
Which is expected, I guess. So.
And do you know what, I find writing quite a daunting prospect because...
Oh, it's horrible.
But the thing with me, I always feel like I need to have certain qualifications. I left school at 15 and I love writing, but I feel like, I don't know, I feel like no one's taught me how to do it. They have, but to actually write is very skilled. What would you say for people that are scared, that they want to... They've got. I think we've all got stories in us. We've all got a book in us. So what would you say to people that want to write but feel that they don't have the right qualifications, or what tips would you give young people?
Oh, it's such a thing there. I think that if you can speak, you can write. And if you can...
I'm screwed.
...write something and read it out loud. But I think also what we were saying earlier about how everyone's faking it, I think just to... imagine all the writers on your bookshelf are all naked and don't know what they're doing, and honestly it's such a like obvious thing to say, but to just start doing it, and doing it for fun, doing it for a blog. I think I really developed my writing voice for the first time sending emails to my best friend when we went to university in different cities, and we would send these like 2,000 word emails that were basically just trying to make each other laugh, and which I consider some of my favorite writing still. So I think really just not feel intimidated by it. And also, if it helps to have a deadline,
I
had
that.
A really like daunting deadline, and the shame I felt about what if I let down the people who had entrusted me to, like my agent and then the publisher who had trusted me to write this book, and how much I didn't want to disappoint them, really was the only thing that got it done. So self-loathing and also self-confidence.
So I just wanted to ask, so from the time you started researching until, you know, the book was published, what was the time?
So I met with an agent who had found, who had seen my writing for BuzzFeed. So this is why people who want to write just start doing it wherever it is, because right. agents
That's
are out
the thing,
there
isn't it? That's
lurking
it.
On the internet. Yeah. And so he contacted me. He said, do you want to meet and talk about book ideas? And I said yes, thinking it would be like a few weeks, but it was the next morning. I met him.
Hello.
Charlie Viney. Shout out to Charlie Viney. And I told him my first idea, which was this comedy history book that I wanted to do about women. He said, sure, do that. And then he pestered me a few weeks after that to come up with the pitch, and then he pitched that, and then the proposal, which is the next step. And then so it was honestly, from the time I really started writing it was honestly only April last year, and I was Ooh, wrapping it up
wow.
in August.
That's
as I was
quick.
Before I started my new job. So it was a lot quicker than mm. and it's like a 100,000 word book. It's the oh, wow. format meant that it could be done quick. It's for quick writing. Because it's split up into 100 little sections.
That's amazing.
I thought you were going to say something like 3 years or something.
Yeah.
It is.
That's crazy.
Wow.
No, I know. And it kind of, I don't know, like people, like sometimes I avoid that question because I feel like it'll make me sound like I just like shat it out. But I promise I didn't. What I like to tell myself is that I, if I had had 10 times as much time, I just would have procrastinated 10
yeah,
times
definitely.
As much. And, and I just, instead, I just went into this weird haze where all I did was read and write this research and write and research and write. And I traveled around England mm. a little bit just to get a change of scene mm-hmm. where I was doing this, and stayed in different people's houses. And the only pleasure I allowed myself each week was watching The Bachelor. So
okay. Well, let that be so inspiration for people who want to write. Like this time next year, you could have a book.
Yeah.
I want a series.
Might
of
not
books.
Be published, but you could have written it.
But that's yeah. what it comes down
I
to.
I just say, if you want to do a novel, you have to have it finished before you can get a book deal. But if you do nonfiction, you can just have a little sample and you can get a deal. I'm telling you.
All right.
I want to go do
I do. I've got one. I've got
anyway,
one.
Guys.
I've got a story. The end.
I was about to copy and paste it. And I would do that, I tell you. Hannah, let's talk about the American versus British aspect. Who would you say is making
sure.
the most progress when it comes to equal rights? What country?
I think about this all the time because I was born in London, but I grew up in California. Aye. But then I came back to the UK to do grad school and to start my career, and now I've only just moved back to the US. So I've now seen, I just think that sexism in the UK in many ways is more deeply ingrained culturally. I think that I have a colleague at work here at the Post who I send little articles to from the British press, trying to explain to her what the British media is like, and they're always like, no, but like men hate smart women, and it's like the
it's
front
That's
page
what
of whatever.
Like,
all
yeah.
You,
yeah. yeah.
Like seeing all that kind of stuff frequently. But that said, I think that the UK has has a welfare state in the way that the US doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much more support for poor women, for mothers, mm. for in terms of healthcare, housing,
yeah,
all these things that the UK mm. does so much better. Fundamentally helps women, so I think it's easier to not die as a woman in the UK. But but there's also this like deeply ingrained sexism that is so, you know, take your pick, I guess.
Yeah, walking down the street, smile.
Yeah,
but it's interesting as well that you've lived in both. You've lived in America, you've lived in England, mm-hmm. and you can see that. What's it like as a woman being a writer? What kind of sexism have you come across?
Well, there's always and honestly, since my very first job, age 15, as a lifeguard through to, well, I don't know today. I'm in my current job, I won't speak about that, and I don't really know the answer, but I have always been in offices and situations where I knew that there was a man doing the same job as me or less, with the same qualifications or less, getting paid
more.
Way more, mm-hmm. to even like in the like £10,000 more,
wow.
And it's just such a, and that is kind of the nature of the kind of work I get to do, which I'm so lucky to get to do, and getting to be a writer has, there's always it's very easy for people in power to tell you, you should just be grateful to be here. I think it's way worse for like women of color, particularly who are expected to take a crappy wage because out of gratitude that we're not just like, and especially in journalism in Britain, it just seems to be this funnel from Oxbridge to get a master's at City and then to get to work at one of the papers. So, I think there's always been like a festering rage where you find out about a pay discrepancy like that, that cannot be explained by anything other than the way the world is. I think there's a problem of the people who get, the way you get a big raise in this industry, and I think in many industries, is to be poached from one place to another. So it's the people in power throughout the industry seeing who do they value, who do they think is an irreplaceable genius who has to be pulled in at any cost. And then those are usually men. Those are men seeing other men who see themselves in those people, and then this kind of this horrible vicious cycle, which I hope can be acted against by old girls networks that are as strong as old boys networks. And a lot of my friends who were previously at BuzzFeed UK and I are now sort of out in other jobs and will always be trying to lift each other up, and that's really inspiring and wonderful and wholesome. But I just think there needs to be, I just, like, UK newsrooms are so so male and so white and so dark.
I've worked in newsrooms for again, stories I could tell you, which I will do when
I hear no
yeses. Look, Hannah Jewell, thank you so much for joining us and being part of the show here for UN Women UK. We really really appreciate it, and I'm a little jealous that you are tucked up in bed.
I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That's a nice thing to say to you.
That's right, as long as you're snuggled. That's all that matters.
Just how good your sleep is going to be when you're done.
Do you know what? It's going to be so deep. It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Hannah, for talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Good
bye.
Luck.
Bye.
Oh, bless her. Yeah, I know. And I am going to sleep so heavy, you have no idea.
Sinuses.
Oh, yeah, again. I feel sorry for the husband. I just want to let you know that Isata is in the studio. We've also got Eartha. We've also got Amanda still here as well. We're all here together. Yeah. I've even told my other half, I will be a bit of an arsey cow. When you see me, where I fit, you know.
Well, at least you've warned him.
But again, he can't like battle against that.
Yeah, no.
Like
through sickness, through health, death do us
part. 24 hours. You do it.
Yes.
And again, we're all for gender equality. But the husband, okay, when I need him, we are gonna take a little musical interlude, aren't we, Amanda? You're very excited about this next song.
Do you know what? I feel like we just, you know, need to just get up.
I kind of think we should.
Do you know what I mean? Just rave it out a little bit. It's what, 1:45?
It is 1:45. We're going to play Ain't Nobody by Rufus and Chaka Khan. Here we go.
Come on. Woo-hoo.